Dear listeners, Sairam from Prashant Nilam, the most happening place on the planet, as I always say, and today is the last day of this most eventful year, the year that saw the glorious 90th birthday celebrations of our beloved Bhagwan. To me, personally, this year has been just a constant reminder from Bhagwan. Every moment I felt and I continue to feel Bhagwan is just telling us every second, see, I am here. See, I am in you. See, I am with you. See, I am always guiding you. See, I am there with you. I was there with you in that step. See, I am there when you wanted to embark on that project. I was there. See, I am there every moment of your life. Do you realize that? In so many ways, through so many people, at every moment, Swami was just instilling it into us again and again that I am there with you, around you. I am carrying you in your moments of strife. I am holding you in your moments of difficulties. I had the opportunity to speak to two devotees from United Kingdom who were here in Prashant Nilam for the Christmas celebrations. In fact, the entire decoration for Christmas celebrations 2015 was done by devotees from United Kingdom, and it was such a marvelous labor of love. The Cyclone Hall converted into a cathedral of divine joy. It looked like a magnificent church, and to make this happen, so many devotees, hundreds of them from United Kingdom, worked tirelessly for months. Once this was over, three beautiful days of Christmas celebrations, I wanted to know from them, how does it feel after the celebrations? What is it that they went through? What is it that they are going to carry with them back to United Kingdom? And fortunately, I had the opportunity to speak to two devotees, Sister Pallavi Tanna and Brother Hitesh Vyas. It was a beautiful session of sharing from the heart. So what I'm going to do is play for you this 20 minutes of conversation that I had with both of them, and then we'll move on to the teachings of Christ on love and truth and peace, and also how to practically really live these principles in our daily life. Mr. William Miller will share his insights on these aspects of Bhagwan's teachings and the message of Jesus Christ. And then we'll move on to Bhagwan's message for us on the new year. So that's what is in store for you in this last leg of Thursday Life, coming to you straight from the studios of Radio Sai.
Tune into Sai. Spend the day with Sai.
From 6 a.m. to 9:30 p.m. on Radio Sai Thursday Live.
Radio Sai Thursday Live.
So welcome to Outside Inside, Deep Inside. I'm Team Radio Sai's Bishu, and today, as I just told you, we are going to listen to two devotees from United Kingdom sharing their experiences of being in Prashant Nilam for Christmas 2015. Sairam, Sister Pallavi Tanna and Brother Hitesh Vyas, and welcome to Outside Inside Deep Inside, our segment on Radio Sai on every Thursday night. So, Christmas is over, three glorious days, and you are still here in Prashant Nilam. What is it that is lingering in your heart?
At the moment, I'm just trying to get over, like, it's just been a magical experience being here. To me, still, I can't believe I'm still here, and I came here, and I was, you know, so how Swami made it possible. It's just like a dream come true.
You didn't know whether this trip is going to happen?
No, I didn't, no. I mean, when it was announced, I felt, okay, I want to go. But in my mind, I thought, will I be able to? There was lots of questions going through my mind. But I still kept my faith right till the end. And here I am, and I still can't believe it.
So why do you think Bhagwan brought you this time? What is it that you're going to take from here? What are those cherishable moments of Christmas 2015?
I think it's each and every moment, each and every day. I mean, just the way things have worked out. Like from the beginning, the journey here, the unity within our group, you know, the decorations, especially the best thing was stepping inside Sai Kulwant Hall and actually standing in that where Swami actually walked. It was just unbelievable. I didn't think that day would ever come. You know, in the past when I visited, I wouldn't even dream I'd be there. And Swami just made it happen.
When you came before, Bhagwan's physical form was there, and you never thought that that sacred space where Bhagwan walked, you will be standing there.
I'd be standing there. I still, when I was looking at that door, I think, you know, one of the uncles told me that when Swami used to open that door, and I was literally looking at that door, and I'm feeling, will he walk out? It's hard to explain.
It's so real.
That I'm actually standing there, and it's, that emptiness was there. I still felt Swami, it was difficult to accept. That he's not around.
This is the first time you're coming after.
That's right. That's why it's a bit difficult departure. This time around.
So what are your beautiful moments when you had come, when Bhagwan was there in flesh and blood?
I came last in 2010 and with the UK pilgrimage group. And the best moment was, I think it was on the 6th of August, the children's choir was going to perform. And now what had happened on that day, we all sort of came in. There was a big group, 1,200 of us. And we sort of all walked, you know, came in all together, the day to children. I actually literally did get a seat on the front row where Swami would come down in his wheelchair. And at the moment, all things were going through my mind, thinking, oh, I can't see the children. You know, it was just natural that I felt. But I didn't realize I was sitting right on the front row. And all of a sudden, I had tears in my eyes saying, oh, I can't see the children. And I said, I know I shouldn't be feeling like that. But somebody from behind just patted me and they said, detach. I really didn't know what she meant. And all of a sudden, the Swami came down early that day. He came down. He literally stopped just this much distance, you know, not, you know, just a footstep away. He sort of stood there, and I just totally went blank. And he said, where are you from? Now, the way he was standing, it was like a semicircle between three of us. But I think it was just that flash. I just couldn't do anything or move. But one sister luckily just got up and said, UK. He was literally there for a few moments. And that was the last. And then Swami drove by. So I think that was really just the last time, you know. And that memory, I'll never forget that day. I think that's always stayed within me.
His presence is so eloquent in the sense that, you know, he doesn't even have to speak, but if he's just there.
Exactly, exactly.
So much happens within, isn't it?
Yeah. So I think it's since that day that I realized that he is listening to you. And even now, I think now I feel that he still is there. And by me coming here, it's all his will.
And you had 3 days. You had the choir, you had the decorations,
exactly.
And then you had the children's choir. And being part of the UK group, obviously you are part of the decorations. How was it, you know, decorating Sai Kulwanthal?
It was just magnificent. As, I mean, as I say, like, if I was back in the UK, like, you know, okay, we have our parties and events to organize, and it's just such a mission. So I'm thinking, like, when they were deciding to come here, saying, oh, we're going to decorate, I'm, like, thinking, how is it going to be possible, you know, such a big place like this? But yeah, it all fell into place. You know, we had the choir, and that was just beautiful as well, taking part. My children took part in the play.
Oh, wow.
So I think everything just went so smoothly. I think the main is the unity within all of us. So that really, and it's just like one big, all my family back in UK are saying, oh, you know, we missed you. But I think I'm with my Sai family here. So I've not really missed anything, and I won't do anything to be back here.
How are your children feeling?
You know, they're just blessed. I think they're going to find it very hard when they go back.
Oh.
Yeah, I think they've made the most of everything here.
Wow, wonderful. And Brother Hitesh, I understand you have come for the first time. Is that true?
Yeah, first time. Been planning for the last 10 years. It looks like Baba has made my wish come true.
So what are your memories? What is it that is going on in your heart?
First thing is, from the day I decided, I come from a Cardiff area. Wherever UK Vice President lives there, Viru. We go to Saxon every 2 weeks.
Yeah.
He's been encouraging me to come to Puttaparthi every time I go and see him. So I thought I'll make a trip this time. Baba made everything come true. From the day when I decided, planned my holidays, booked my holidays in work. As you know, it's difficult in UK to get holidays booked Christmas time. I got my holidays booked, got my visa done all in the same town, and even got my travel agent to book my ticket from a local town in Wales, which was wonderful. So Baba's done everything for me. Yeah, and on the journey to coming from London to Bombay, I met Viru Bhaiya at the airport.
Mm-hmm.
And we were on the same flight. So Baba's arranged everything for me from the start to finish. And then I had to break at Bombay for 2 days. On the third day, I came to Puttaparthi. I landed at Bangalore. I picked my phone up and dialed the number which I was given by Brother Siva from a UK meeting we all arranged.
Mm-hmm.
And I rung that number up, and the taxi driver said, I'll be there in half an hour to pick you up.
Mm.
And Baba's done everything.
Mm.
And when I came here on the 23rd, and I went for darshan in the evening, when I was sitting down and I looked up there in the middle, Baba's photo, felt like Baba was watching me all the time.
Mm.
Whichever angle I'm sitting and I'm looking, Baba is giving me a smile and telling me welcome.
Mm.
And that was wonderful.
First time in Prashanthi Nilayam, what is it that is fascinating to you?
Fascinating is a totally different lifestyle. I never thought I'll experience a basic lifestyle in India by staying in Prashanthi, and I'm going to take that back to say that you can leave that lifestyle if you wanted to.
You don't need to be very simple.
Simple lifestyle. You don't need to worry about having your TV or every day, going on the internet, on your mobile. And I think I needed a holiday. I think this was like a pilgrimage and a holiday, both built in one.
Best place to actually relax, isn't it?
It is the best place to relax. It's totally different when you go out shopping. It's totally a different atmosphere. As soon as you enter here, it is a different atmosphere.
There's something in the air, isn't it?
Yeah, it's like, you know, I can't believe I'm one of those, you know, I'm usually on my phone, on Facebook, this and that, all the social media. But here, since I've come here, like, my daughter did say, oh, do you want to get the... And I'm like thinking, no, it's really not... Initially, I thought I'll get it, but... You know, apart from using my alarm for my phone and taking pictures, I've not really missed my phone at all. And I just feel it's strange how back in UK we sort of so addicted to these sort of things. And here nothing matters. We don't have any. It's all stress free. We don't worry what people are doing there or how are they feeling or what's one thinking of you. It's just such a different feeling.
That's something amazing, isn't it? I mean, even if you go on a vacation, you can't leave your gadgets.
Exactly.
You want your gadgets.
Yeah, you'd want everything,
But here, you know, you're not stressed, but you're blessed.
Blessed, exactly. It's just such a blissful feeling, you know.
And many times I feel, you know, when you go on holidays to some other beach or wherever, you actually, at the end of the day, you are more tired.
Yeah, you need another vacation.
But perhaps a place like this is something which really energizes you, body, mind and spirit, isn't it, Brother Hitesh?
Yeah. I think so. I think I'm going to be totally a different person when I go back home. And I was supposed to bring my daughter, but she planned that she didn't want to come this time, but next time, Dad, look forward to coming with you.
I mean, people often do say that, what are you going to do there for 20 days? But it's just, you know, 20 days is not enough.
Not enough. You soak in the bliss.
Exactly.
And I think Baba's made it easier for me. I was only going to stay for 5 days.
Mm-hmm.
When I was coming back, I extended extra 2 days.
Oh.
So Baba wanted me to stay here for longer.
Wow.
So everything happened just magical.
Mm. And from all that happened during the Christmas, the carols and the drama and the students' carols, the children's carols, what was your most favorite moment in the Christmas celebration?
Looking at the Kurnant Hall and looking at the cathedral.
Oh.
It's because I even go to the Christmas churches in the UK from when I was a young boy.
Mm.
And looking at all that and bringing that back to here in India. It's just wonderful, and everybody in work are waiting, so I got all my DVDs and everything to take to them for them to have a look how we celebrate Christmas in India, because they just can't believe it.
Mm. You told them that you're going to come to Puttaparthi for Christmas?
I told my work people are coming to Puttaparthi. I sent them some discourses on Baba's Christmas.
Oh.
And they were all wonderful. They told me I have a good journey. I had a lot of emails in work. And they said, we want to have a look how the trip was for you. So they're all waiting for me.
So you knew Baba for very long? For more than 10 years, you said?
So I knew Baba from when I was young, because I'm from Uganda.
Mm-hmm.
And Baba came to Uganda, I think the first overseas trip he ever made to Kampala.
Yes.
So I could remember somebody saying that there's a guy with a fuzzy hair and an orange gown walking, come in town to see us. And that's how I can remember from a young boy. From here, I've been Baba's devotee for about, say, 15 years.
Mm-hmm.
And I've always been planning to come to Puttaparthi, but the journey wasn't, I think, was made until now.
How is it that you developed that interest to come to Prashantalam, even though it happened now, but something would have happened for you to feel that, no, I have to go to Prashantalam?
It's a Sai family encouragement. And going to bhajans every 2 weeks and all, following all that and reading. I read Baba's daily thought every day while going to work on my mobile.
That helps?
Yeah, that helps a lot. Because you're traveling for half an hour. Just flick the phone, you get the thought of the day. And read that every day in the morning. I think it makes your mind refresh.
And you like the bhajans?
Yeah, I like the bhajans as well. I'm not a good singer. I'm only a background singer at the moment.
But everybody sings.
Yeah.
Isn't it? Everybody becomes a musician in the
Sai
group.
That's right. Yeah. No, it's just, I think when people make you feel welcome in our centers and, you know, the family, it makes you want to grow nearer more and more.
Yes.
And then you start getting more involved and you don't realize that over the years how much you really have got involved in everything.
It just happens unconsciously.
It just happens. It happens at its own time. You know, Swami puts you in places, you know, just for your own self-transformation. So
I remember talking to two sisters from South Africa 2 years ago during Christmas, and one of the sisters was not interested to come to Prashantalam. And the other sister, older one, said, okay, just come with us to Bangalore and, you know, you just step into Prashantalam for half a day. You just be there for half a day and if you don't like it, we'll send you back. We'll book your tickets and you be comfortable. So this sister came and that afternoon they were doing the carol practice, rehearsal sessions. So she went there because there was nothing else to do. So she sat there for the rehearsal sessions. She was there for like 2 hours there. And after that, something happened and she said, I'm not going to go. She said, I have never experienced this much love. And this was like a week or more before Christmas. The carol practice session was just, you know, just gathering momentum. Just sitting in the carol practice session, not even going to the samadhi or anywhere else in Prashantalam, she felt, I remember this because when you said that love, she felt so much love. She said, there are some people from so many cultures and speaking so many languages.
That's right,
and, but there is so much of love there. She felt at home and she stayed on.
I think my brother had the same experience. We had some friends living outside and he was passing by. So he stopped over in Prashanti for a day. And it was during Baba's birthday. So it was a busy period. So when he came here, he thought it was just a day trip, a come and go. He came for that day and he was fine. Then he decided to stay another day. And you won't believe it, I think he stayed just over a week and we were like back home, we were like really surprised at how can he, although he had his slippers stolen about 6 times. But it was just amazing. He just didn't want to leave here. So it's exactly what you were just saying. It was something that just pulls you. And you just want to keep coming again and again.
Because Baba said, you know, the world will give you everything. But Swami said there are two things that only God can give you. And those are peace and bliss.
Yes.
And I think that's why he named it Prashantinilam, the abode of permanent peace.
Peace,
I think the peace that we experience here is something that perhaps nothing else in the world can give.
Yeah, I think it just energizes you. You know, you need that. When you get back, you know, you feel energized now. So, you know, we're just sort of dashing to do things when we get back home. You know, so much we can take back with us and pass on to everybody there.
I think once you have peace within, it really strengthens you, isn't it?
Yeah.
In my case, I think made me look at getting peace in a way, that it's a holiday in a way. Going back home, no stress or nothing. And then getting on with the other things in the UK.
Baba is adept at converting our holidays into holy days.
Until it's time to come back again.
And another good experience is for medication. I went to see my local doctor to get a malaria tablets. And I said, I'm going to a pilgrimage in Bangalore. And I said, Satya Sai Baba. And he said, I've heard about him. Do you do seva then? I said, yeah, we run medical camps and that. He said, when you come back, please come and see me. I'm retiring. I'll be interested in going in, joining your medical camps. So Baba must have sent me to him for the prescription. And it was just a wonderful news to start a holiday to see a doctor telling you that.
So
and
you mean
doctor.
The first trip and he's already made you a messenger.
Yeah. So that's a wonderful news.
Wow. When we look at it, you know, every time we come to Bharti, it has so many dimensions, isn't it?
Yeah,
so many dimensions to it. You know, A lot happens internally, a lot happens around us also. Every time we come, as you very rightly said, you are always different, isn't it?
Yeah.
You are always enriched, and there is so much that Bhagwan is doing through you every time he gives you that opportunity.
He talks through you, you know, it's like, you sort of, it's just difficult to explain, basically.
In a way, he's guiding you, but you don't really realize.
You don't realize.
Like, I didn't realize booking this trip that it's going to be, I was worried that it's going to be difficult. I never been around this side of India. I've been to Bombay, and I never thought I'd be coming this way.
Yeah. So my children are already planning the next, I think there's some youth festival. I thought, you know what, we've not even got back home yet.
Wow.
So it's nice. It's nice when your whole family is involved as well. So it does really help.
Yeah, it's much more fulfilling.
It's much more fulfilling. And people will never understand how much you really, you know, it's pulling you there.
Yes.
So it's very different.
You have to experience it.
You have to experience it.
As you very rightly said, you can never explain.
Yeah.
And that experience really started from our first, when we had the UK meeting.
Mm-hmm.
I was the only one in that group, first time coming to UK. And everybody came and met me and tell me, don't worry, you'll be all right.
I think that's that's that love.
Yeah. And when I arrived here, everybody greeted me and everybody's looking after me. Are you all right? Everything. Mm-hmm. And touch wood, no problem, stomach problem or nothing. Yeah. Baba is really looking after me.
And now once you go back, you're going to do that.
Yeah.
To all the other people whom you have now been the messenger, now that is what you're going to do. You'll be fine, don't worry.
I mean, when we were coming, everyone was so envious that you're so lucky. But I'm saying, you know what, if there's a will, there's a way.
Yes.
You know, you just grab every opportunity you can get.
Mm. When you have that pure will, as Bhagwan says, when we have a pure will, then Swami will arrange the universe to...
Yeah, that's right. He'll put everything into perspective.
Amazing.
Don't worry.
Beautiful. So finally, Brother Hitesh, what is it that you're going to cherish from this trip, and what is it that you're going to say to your family and your friends once you go back?
When I watch the old videos and then Baba's walking on the sand, I can now exactly place where he was in the hole, where he was walking through.
Mm.
So I can realize, and that's what I was doing in the hole when I was thinking of Baba and going back and looking at think of some of the videos I've seen.
Mm.
So he's putting that in place because it's totally different when you look at the hole now than what you see before.
Wow.
And also for me, Baba is, when he was alive and now, there's no difference to myself. It's still the same because I never experienced the feeling of meeting him live or seeing him live.
Wow.
So I don't think it'd be any difference to myself. He'll still be there, you know, as the same person.
How did you feel?
Well, for me, it is hurting because when I saw him in 2010 so close, I mean, to step into the mandir and, you know, it is there. But I think the vibrations were really beautiful that, you know, he's still there, even though not in his physical form. But he is, the main thing is that he is with me all the time and he always answers my questions. Whenever there's a problem or anything in life, I always do get my answers, whether it be through talks or discourses. Even in this trip when we were having, one of the speakers was speaking, something was going through my mind. But so, you know, that's always there and it always happens back in UK when we've got talks or something, he answers our questions. So I think that's something really...
As Bhagwan said, I'm with you, in you, around you. You feel that, isn't it?
Yeah.
You feel that.
That's right.
And the more you feel, the more you experience. Actually, it just goes on increasing.
That's right.
Wow. Wonderful. Thank you very much, Brother Hitesh and Sister Pallavi.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Wasn't that beautiful? How Swami touches each person is so fantastic. All we have to do is... just tune ourselves just a little bit and then we will begin to hear his message. Mahatma Gandhiji once said, prayer is the key for the morning and bolt for the evening. Prayer helps us so much in cleansing and tuning ourselves to the Lord, isn't it? In fact, many years ago, Swami himself wrote a prayer and he gave it to the students and said, this is how you should pray to the Lord. The Lord himself telling us how we should pray to him so that we can get his grace. And Bhagwan said, this is what you should say to the Lord with all your heart, all your mind, all your soul, with your every pore of your being. O Lord, take my love and let it flow in fullness of devotion to Thee. O Lord, take my hands and let them work incessantly for Thee. O Lord, take my soul and let it be merged in one with Thee. O Lord, take my mind and thoughts and let them be in tune with Thee. O Lord, take my everything and let me be an instrument to work for Thee. What a fantastic message. I didn't even realize Bhagwan has used that word, let me be in tune with Thee. We were talking about tuning, and this is exactly what Bhagwan has written in this prayer too. If we want to tune to the Lord, all we have to do is tell the Lord, O Lord, take my mind and thoughts and let them be in tune with Thee. Then we can become His instruments. O Lord, take my everything and let me be an instrument to work for Thee. Anyone who wants to live his life for God, I think this is the prayer that he should make every morning and every evening. Give the Lord our love, give the Lord our hands, give the Lord our soul, give the Lord our mind and thoughts, and give the Lord our everything, so that we just become an instrument in His hands. My brothers in the studio gave a beautiful tune. Yes, a beautiful tune, a musical tune to this prayer, which helps us to tune ourselves to the Lord. Let us soak ourselves in the vibrations of this beautiful prayer. Isn't that so elevating? The power of prayer, the power of tuning into the Lord. Almost 25 years ago, there was an article in New Realities magazine in their May 1990 issue with the title, The Power of Prayer, Old Approach, New Wonders. It was written by Dr. Larry Dosey. He's a physician and author. He has done his MD from University of Texas Southwestern Medical Center in Dallas, USA. And he has done some fascinating experiments on prayer, and this was conducted by an organization called Spindrift. So what they did is they used sprouting seeds as a biological medium to measure the effects of prayer. When two groups of identical seeds were placed side by side and one was prayed over and the other was not, they found that the prayed for group always yielded more shoots. And the results were reproducible and they were consistent any number of times they did this experiment with different seeds, they got this same result, that when you pray for a group of seeds, they give better shoots, more shoots. In fact, they also found out that when the seeds were stressed, and they did this by adding salt water to their roots, so that became a health crisis for the seeds, they found out that the difference of what prayer did to them became striking when they were stressed. Different types of seeds and different types of stress produced the same results. In fact, prayer became more effective when the seeds were in more distressful situations. When they were stressed, prayer is what helped them. And when different control groups were prayed over for varied amounts of time, the germination count was proportional. That is, more prayer equaled more sprouts. So when there was more prayer, the seeds were giving out more shoots, more sprouts. And the other interesting conclusion that they derived is, those people who prayed often, who were experienced in praying, they produced greater results than those who were novice in praying. So what it shows is, prayer is something that you can learn and you can get better at. And the more you do, the more efficient you become, the more efficacious your prayer becomes. And there are two basic types of prayer, according to their research: directed prayer and non-directed prayer. Directed prayer is when you have a clear image in mind about what you want to achieve. For example, you want a good paying job, or you want the healing of a particular illness, or you know, you use visualization techniques and try to produce that specific outcome. That is directed prayer. Non-directed prayer is when you release your personal agenda completely and you ask for the highest good in the situation and just say, Lord, let thy will be done. And when this organization, Spindrift Researches, they compared directed prayer and non-directed prayer, they found out that both the methods of prayer worked, but the non-directed prayer, the non-directed technique of prayer, was actually more powerful and in fact twice as effective. It is so clear that when we step out of the way, more can come through. We actually, by putting our conditions, our limitations, our will, we are actually stopping what fantastic things can happen. We are stopping that universal consciousness, universal intelligence to do the best by giving our own ideas. So when you're trying to control the results through our concept of what is best, we are only placing limits on what can happen. When we leave it to the universal consciousness, universal intelligence to do what is good for us, or what is good for a particular situation or a particular person, the effect is far greater. In fact, the more selfless our prayer is, greater is the effect. Many years ago, in a conversation with Dr. John Hislop, Bhagwan explained that prayer should not be equated with begging. In fact, Bhagwan says that if ever we have to beg only to God, because we are bigger, we are part of God. So if ever we need anything, we should beg only to God. We can become a beggar only in front of God. But Bhagwan said, prayer is not begging. Prayer is talking to the Lord. It is our duty to approach the Lord, to approach the Divine Parent whenever we need anything. Swami says, you know, the mother who knows that the child must have milk, but the mother will know that the child needs to be served milk only when the baby cries. That is how we should never feel ashamed to pray. We should feel it's our right to pray, and we should always pray, always tell the Lord. If we have any pressing need or difficulty in life, Swami said, we should pray. And the best thing to do is to pray. Pray without any conditions. Pray for peace. We do not know what good we can do to others with a sincere prayer emerging from a space of total unconditional love. In fact, in one discourse, Bhagwan said that when you pray for a particular thing, a particular object, you know, it does not go straight to him. It is as if a small prayer, a small petition, you know, a directed petition will go to a particular minister in the government of India. Only if the issue or a matter is really very significant, it goes to the Prime Minister's table. Swami said, when a prayer is absolutely selfless, then it goes directly to him. Otherwise, it goes to other gods. It goes to other areas. It does not go straight to Him. So that is how important prayer is. That is how important selfless prayer is. And that is what I feel we should be doing this new year. Just sanctify our lives by thinking of ourselves less. Bhagwan has explained what is happiness. Happiness is union with God. What is joy? Jesus first, God first, others next, and yourself last. I am last. What is sigh? Sigh first, all others next, and I last. This is the joy that we should cultivate in this sacred period of Christmas and New Year. That is the way to spread Christmas joy. That is the way to bring in Christmas joy and New Year happiness. I had the opportunity to talk to Mr. William Miller, who is an internationally recognized expert in values-driven corporate renewal and innovation since the mid-1980s, and he was a senior consultant for innovation management at SRI International, Stanford Research Institute, USA. And as president of the Global Creativity Corporation since 1987, he has explored with clients, which include over 100 corporations in more than a dozen countries worldwide, how creativity, business and spirituality are all facets of the same jewel. Two of his four books have become rated among the top 30 business books of the year in the United States of America, and his 4-CD audio program, The Art of Spiritual Leadership in Business, was released in USA in 2003. And most important, he has been a guest faculty at Sri Santhisai Institute of Higher Learning, Bhagwan's University here in Prashant Nilayam, teaching the management students. He is also a guest faculty at Stanford University Graduate School of Business. And throughout his career, William has maintained his devotion to his most deeply held spiritual values, continuously finding ways to make work as worship. Last Thursday, I played for you one part of the discussion that I had with him, where he talked about those three declarations that Jesus made. I am a messenger of God, I am son of God, and I and my Father are one, which was the theme of this year's Christmas celebrations. He gave his insights in the light of Swami's teachings. And today, let's hear the next part of this conversation, where we talk about how to really practice love in our daily life, in our social life, in our professional life, how to be truthful, how to be peaceful in our real practical world, in this cutthroat world of competition and the mad corporate environment. So here is this beautiful conversation that I recorded with Mr. William Miller just a few days before Christmas.
Sarah, Mr. Miller, and welcome once again to this beautiful study circle.
Thank
on
you.
The message of Jesus and Bhagwan's insights on the life and the teachings of Jesus Christ. One of the things that very common in every Christmas discourse, of mm-hmm. course, it ends with love.
Mm-hmm.
Perhaps you'll never find any Christmas message where Swami has not spoken about love. Ultimately, it will end with love, and he will say that live in God, God is love.
Mm-hmm.
But one way, Swami said, you can practice love is practicing three principles.
Mm-hmm.
One is you should forget all the harm that is done to you, mm-hmm. which basically means you should love your enemies.
Right.
The second thing is that you should forget all the good that you have done to others. And the third is to see God in everyone, to see love in everyone. Can you dwell on what is your perspective on love your enemies? How easy is it in the business world? Can we really do it?
You know, I've always felt that when Jesus said, love your enemies, it was the most radical thing he ever asked us to do.
Mm.
You know, the most difficult, the most provocative, the most, I don't know, just something you might even just, I can't do it. You know,
yes.
I don't know what that means. So I'd like to read a few words of what he actually said
mm-hmm.
and talk about it in light of what Swami also says about what does he mean by love.
Okay.
What is divine love? He says divine love, first of all, has three qualities.
Mm-hmm.
It is changeless, means it's unconditional. It doesn't turn on and off like a faucet.
Mm.
It is selfless, it doesn't ask for something back. And it's fearless. It's strong, it's always radiating.
Wow.
Now, Jesus said at one point, he says, I tell you, love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you. Now, by the way, who's the enemy? it's not just someone from another country. It can be the person who just shoved you sitting down in the mandir.
Mm.
You know, in that moment, you think that this is an enemy.
Mm.
You know, or it could be the person in your family that has a very different opinion about something, and you are battling with them like they're an enemy.
Mm.
So enemies can be
yes.
at all sorts of levels of consciousness. But he says, and so love your enemies, to pray for those who persecute you, to show that you are the children of your Father who is in heaven, to show you that you know that you have the same DNA as God and everyone else shares that divinity. For he makes the sun rise on the wicked and the good. God does.
Mm.
It makes the rain fall upon the upright and the wrongdoers yes. alike. Which is what Jesus is saying, is that God's love is changeless and unconditional.
To love like the sun loves everyone.
Yes.
But can we really do it?
Yes. Well, you know, one of the first things I just want to say is the English language makes it difficult in one way.
Mm-hmm.
Because the English language has subject, verb, object. I love my wife. So it's as if I'm loving my wife because of some quality of my wife. Okay? I'm loving because of some quality that's in this object. And yet what God's love is doesn't have an object. God simply is love. And whatever comes in the consciousness of God gets bathed in that love. God's love rains on the just and the unjust. The sun rises on the good and the bad. So God's love doesn't...
You don't love to be loved back.
You don't love to be loved back, and you don't love because of the qualities.
Yes. You love
simply
because...
love, not because.
Yeah. There's no because.
There's no because.
Yes.
You know? And so this is what Jesus was teaching. The other thing that Jesus said, he says, treat well those who detest you, pursue you with hatred, be merciful, sympathetic, tender, responsive, and compassionate, even as your Father is all of these. So he was really exhorting, like, this was our calling. This is our vocation, if you will. Now, how did Jesus actually embody that? Why, what gives him the right to say that?
Yes.
We can look at the end of his life.
Yes.
You know, as in the body before he rose. And see that how, okay, changeless. Okay. When he's up on the cross, what does he say? God forgive him, for they know not what they do. That forgiveness was an automatic expression of his love. That whether that were praising him or harming him,
yes.
he could love.
Yes.
Selfless. When he was in the night before his death, he was in the Garden of Olives, they said. And he was so distressed about what was about to happen, he was eating, sweating blood. But he eventually said, Father, I don't want to do this, but it's not my will that counts. It's your will. Let it be selfless. Let me not do it because I have an ego desire. I don't want to face the pain. Let me be surrendered. Let me be selfless here. This was his another act of love on his part. And the fearless, the fact that he's even willing to die.
Yes.
Because he knew it was coming. And he'd known it for a while. So that was the fearlessness, that he was willing to follow what he needed to do. You know, so that's the prescription. Now, how do we live that? You know, even in our day to day, how do we practice love that is changeless?
You know, fearless
and fearless,
selfless.
You know, and selfless. You know, perhaps one of those is that, you know, when we're serving others, are we serving them? Do we serve in the kitchen? Do we serve at our customers at work? Do we serve our children, because we want something back? Or do we do it simply because that's an expression of love?
Hmm.
You know, we can monitor ourselves and see how well we're growing. If someone then doesn't like our what we've done for them and we get angry, oh, okay, then we had a string attached to that. That was not selfless love.
Hmm.
So we can watch ourselves. And we can also, by the way, not have the expectation of ourselves that we'll always be perfect. We can love ourselves even with our faults. It's like this. You know, I love little puppy dogs. I see a little small puppy dog, and I have this expression of love coming from my heart. Now, can I hold that and then turn it over here to a situation that I don't normally like? Can I hold the same heart opening and see what happens there? Where this becomes very important in my marriage, my wife and I decided before we were married that when we are in a conflict, okay, and we might at some level think we're enemies, okay, we realize there is no wisdom, because when we're in conflict, the mind and wisdom has shut down. The heart has closed. And the heart is the seat of the booty.
Yes.
So we said, if we're in conflict, it is okay for us to say, time out. Let's put this on the altar. Let's put it at God's feet. Let's wait until we are in a place of open-heartedness where we actually have some wisdom. Then we'll renew the conversation and we'll see what to do. Because why struggle to come up with a solution when there's no wisdom? It's going to be an unwise solution.
Yes.
You know, it'll simply be something that stops the conflict but won't really be a solution. So let's just pause a day, a week, an hour, until we're both ready to come back with an open heart. We can hold hands, look each other in the eye, and say, now let's continue the conversation. What shall we do here? So that's the way that we have moved back into the sense of, let's be in a loving place where it's unconditional, and then look at our differences.
And it works wonderfully in organizations also, isn't it?
It does. It absolutely does. For example, at Hewlett-Packard one time, they did a piece of research at Hewlett-Packard Labs. The head at that time was a man named Frank Karuba. And he wanted to study what was the difference between project teams that were not successful, project teams that were successful. This is, you know, worldwide product development for Hewlett-Packard. And then teams that were extraordinarily successful, even beyond their own imagination.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the difference between unsuccessful and successful teams, as you might imagine, was differences of talent, creativity, motivation, vision, things like this. But there was no difference on any of those qualities between the successful teams and the extraordinary teams. None of the things about talent or creativity or motivation or vision explained the difference. But there was, he said, two qualities that stood out in the extraordinary teams. The first was that those people truly, deeply cared about the people they would be serving.
Wow.
And he said, now, this is extraordinary. These are geeks who actually understood they had customers, you know. They weren't just technical, you know, technocrats. They actually felt they wanted to put themselves in their other people's shoes with empathy and really create for them something that was good. He said, but the second quality was a quality of truth.
Mm-hmm.
He said they found in themselves a spirit of truth in which no one had to pretend to be something that they weren't. That they could be authentic. They could say, I don't know, if they didn't know. There was no politics going on that way. He said, so really, it was the qualities of love and caring and truth and authenticity. Those two qualities brought the synergy of good, talented, motivated people, let's say from 70% to 95%, and that's where the extraordinary results came from.
Wow.
So the caring, that sense of love and reaching out, not being self-interested,
fantastic,
really has a powerful, powerful impact in the business world.
In fact, I remember when Bhagwan was speaking to all the management students, he would give the definition of manager and say M stands for mind of man and A stands for awareness of the Atma. So what it means is the mind of man should always be aware of the Atma, of the same Atma which is there in everyone.
Yes.
And that is when you can truly be a manager. And Bhagwan used to say that, you know, management is all about man management. It's all about how you can, your mind can feel the Atma, which is there in the other person.
You know, when you're talking about the Atma there, it takes me to the value of truth, as I was also just talking about.
Yes.
Because
is the truth.
Yes. And, you know, Jesus said, you know, if you follow my teachings, you'll come to know the truth. Yes. And the truth will set you free.
Yeah.
Now, what truth is he talking about? Is he talking about the truth where you don't tell a lie? Well, his life was bigger than that. Was it the truth like these are the facts? Somewhat. You know, that you're living the truth. But ultimately, truth means that which never changes.
Yes.
And so what he was really coming to say is that you will know the true being of God. That is truth. That is satya.
Yes.
He says, and it's that true being of God, and you're knowing the true being of God, that will set you free.
Yes.
You know, and that is really the sense of how we then begin to see all as divine, like you were just talking about, and how we begin to treat each other with the knowledge that we all share the divine principle. We're all sons and daughters of God. We're all in the DNA together.
Yes.
That's really what comes along.
On one Christmas discourse, Bhagavan very beautifully said, the cosmos is controlled by the divine.
Yes.
But the divine is governed by truth. And Swami said, the truth is governed by noble people.
Yes.
And that is the reason why noble people are divine.
So
when you start practicing these principles, you actually become noble. And in fact, Swami says, it is these people who govern truth.
And you know, this is where the whole movement towards transparency in government, transparency in business, transparency in our relationships, that is an expression of this truth.
Yes.
You know, I know that in India, one of the revolutions that's happening is that as the bureaucracies are converted into sophisticated IT systems that can track things, the possibility of corruption goes down exponentially because there's transparency into how things are being handled, where they're getting stalled or not stalled, what is the flow through, what is the customer service, you know. And so this is where there is a movement of bringing more truth alive in the actual physical world. This is not just a spiritual dimension. This is a physical earth dimension.
But technology
as well.
Can only aid. Technology only can do so much.
Right.
Ultimately, as Bhagavan says, the transformation should happen.
Yes, absolutely. You know, there's another expression similar to truth, and that is righteousness. As you were saying, truth and righteousness go together like left foot and right foot.
Yes,
you know?
Yes.
And you know, that dharma, that righteousness, in one way gets captured by the expression found in all religions, which is, do unto others as you would have them do unto you. The golden rule. It is found in every single religious text just about that I've ever researched together. And one example of how that actually is a practical thing in our life as well. There's a man named Dr. Chattopadhyay. He was the head of our refractories for one of the companies here, ACC Cement, I think, at the time. And he had a situation where an employee had left, had been dismissed from the company. That employee went out on his own and started selling a type of product that was the same as what ACC was making. But it was not a good product. But he represented it as if it was ACC. And so a customer came to ACC and says, your product has failed. And they said, what product? We've never sold to you. Yes, you did. Through this man. He says, that man doesn't work for us. Well, he sold me saying, you know. So all of a sudden, Dr. Chattopadhyay was faced with, here was a customer who had bought, thinking he was buying from his company, but he was buying bogus from somebody else. So what do you do? You know, he had no responsibility to that customer. He had never sold anything to them. But he said, sir, I will make it right for you. You bought it based on thinking you were buying from us. We have a reputation with you. We will uphold that reputation.
Oh.
Okay? So he did what he felt was dharmic, what was righteous. What he also did from that is he created a trust in his company. That this company stands by its reputation, and its reputation is based on trust. And that was great business. So this is where treating other people as you would have them treat you, this is where that becomes extremely good business principle. Extremely good.
Amazing. In fact, I remember how when on one occasion when Bhagwan was very tired, and the people who were serving Swami, they said, Swami, you should not go for darshan this evening because you are already so tired. Please do not go out for darshan. And there Swami says, do you think I go out to give darshan? I go out to actually have darshan. I go out to see them.
Yes.
Because they have come from so long, and they have come because I have called them.
Yes.
They have come at my will. And I am going there so that I can share love, so that I can see myself.
Yes. That's wonderful, wonderful. You know, Jesus said something else that comes from this way of being. He talked to his disciples and he said, do not be agitated. You know, my peace I give to you. The peace I know from my relationship with the Father I give to you. And it's not the peace of this world. It's the peace from your spiritual knowledge. And that sense of peace that comes from following the sense of love, it's when we have that sense of unconditional love, and we're fearless naturally.
Yes.
Because when it's unconditional love, there is no other in a sense.
True.
You know, and there's a sense of peace there. And so that is where I want to come back to this theme of trust. There's a man named N.S. Raghavan. He's one of the founders of Infosys.
Mm-hmm.
Many, many decades ago, actually. And over time, he became the head of human resources. And he said one of the core values of Infosys was that of internal trust, that we trusted each other. And that has since been found, by the way, from research, as being the most fundamental quality of great places to work. When they do studies of the where the employees say, this is a great place to come to work, trust is the fundamental foundation. But he said, how do you build trust? Do you look at your employees and say, you have to earn my trust? He says, that's backwards.
Hmm.
You start with trusting employees.
Yes.
You start from the basis of, I trust you.
Yeah.
I have no basis not to trust you.
Yes.
Okay. Now, if you give me a basis not to trust you, okay. But I'm going to start from the sense of, I trust. What happens when you do that is that the employees often rise to the occasion. Yes. It's the first time they've been trusted.
Yes. They rise to the occasion.
They rise to the occasion. Yes. There was one story I heard recently where, let's see, this was in Malaysia, or Indonesia. And in that environment, there was a lot of mistrust. And this man started a company. Part of the mistrust would be employees typically in that culture might steal a lot of things from the company, small things. So this man started a food company and says, I'm going to do it differently. I'm going to pay them well so that they don't feel a scarcity. I'm going to treat them well, and I'm going to say, I trust you implicitly. Now, he also put in good metrics, good measures, but he found that the level of stealing became non-existent almost.
Oh, wow.
Now, if someone did steal something, they were immediately let go. There was no tolerance.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, there was so little of it, not because of the fear of that, but because people had already risen to, we like this, and this is the peaceful environment we want to work in.
Because intrinsically, everyone is good.
Yes. You know, that's the truth.
That's the truth.
You know, that is what something in the 1950s, McGregor and others who are the business writers talked about, that people are good. And again, Hewlett-Packard founded on the principle that people are good. They simply want to do a good job if you give them the right environment.
Right.
You know, now, we have to be wise about that, but we have to start from the belief that we are all having those values in us.
Yes.
We all have that aspiration in us to be able to express who we really are.
Yes.
We may have lost the trust that that's possible.
Mm.
We may become discouraged in life.
Mm.
We may have drawn a conclusion that it's not possible in life. But that's the healing. That's the healing that Jesus actually came to help do.
Yes.
And that's why he does come to say, love your enemies, as hard as that may seem.
Yes.
All the rest may be easy. You know?
Yes.
And it comes to one other principle, and that is nonviolence.
Yeah.
There is so much violence in the world, and yet there's also so much energy for nonviolence. You know,
absolutely.
And that, you know, you look at whether it's Martin Luther King or Gandhi or people like that, and, you know, those are the kind of kingpins, we might say, of people who've done that. But there's a man named Ashok Maitra. He used to work as the head of human resources at Times of India.
Mm-hmm.
He tells a beautiful story where when he first started to work there, there was this rivalry between the administration and the journalists.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't talk to each other well. There was kind of a enmity, not a violence per se, but certainly a real discord between them. And he was part of the administration. But what he did, he says, he went to the floor where the journalists were, and he set up his office there.
Oh.
And they said, what are you doing here? You don't belong here. You're the bad guys. You know, go. He says, there's no bad guys here. You know, you're not bad guys. They're not bad guys. This is where I'd like my office. I'm sorry, sir. You know, you're not welcome here. And he says, tell you what, give me 10 days. Let me be here for 10 days. If at the end of 10 days you don't want me here, I will go. But try me for 10 days. And his notion of Advaita, his notion that we are all one here, spread the way he treated them that day, spread the way, of course, he treated his colleagues also. At the end of 10 days, he says, okay, no one's asked me to stay. I think I should go. Oh, no, don't go. Don't go. You know, you're different. And wow. He was able to bring them together in meetings and bridge that difference,
wow.
bridge that emotional violence, if you call it that, that happens in the workplace, bridge that mental violence.
Mm.
It doesn't happen necessarily because of anything physical,
yes.
but you can feel it. And this is how, again, we are called to be love.
Yes.
To be love is expressed as truth or righteousness or peace or nonviolence. And if we carry that unconditional, selfless, fearless sense of love, if we develop that in ourselves, and we can tell. You know, no one has to tell us if we're in that state.
Yes.
We know ourselves if we're being conditional with our love. We know if we're being selfish. We know if we have fear. But if we're determined to keep growing, previously we talked about these stages of growing from a sense of dualism all the way to oneness. As we grow in that, we will actually be able to harness these human values,
yes.
harness that sense of love, and find that life is so much easier, not
yes.
harder.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yes. Life becomes a celebration.
Yeah.
You celebrate every moment, because in every moment you will see the beautiful, miraculous power of love working.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And so, to me, that's the story of what Jesus is bringing us.
Yeah.
Is the story of love.
Yes.
His life reflected love, every moment of it. Even when he was in the temple and throwing out the money changers and screaming at people, it reminds me of times when Swami has raised his voice and maybe shouted a bit. He's done that so to me a couple of times. And yet you could feel he was not shouting at me.
Yeah.
He was shouting at my bad tendencies.
Yes. Yes.
But to me, he was nothing but love.
Yes. And that is the reason why even when he shouted, you only loved him more, because you know that it was only another form of his love.
Exactly. And even Jesus, in those moments that people see him as being harsh in his language, you hypocrites, he was talking to his fellow sons and daughters of God.
Yes.
And saying, don't be that way. There was one night, not too long before he was crucified, where he was up on the hill overlooking Jerusalem, and he wept.
Mm.
He says, you had this beautiful chance, and you've wasted it. My time has come to the end. You didn't take the opportunity God, our Father, has given you. And he wept.
Mm.
He wasn't angry with those people. He was compassionate to them.
Compassion.
The very people who were going to come after him soon. But he wept because they had turned their backs on the opportunity to awaken
yes.
to their God nature.
Yes.
And that's how we have to remember
yes.
those moments when we feel closed-hearted and justified in our mind, that we need to take that time, because there's no wisdom there.
We're just losing one more opportunity. We are,
yes.
Every second gives us an opportunity.
Right.
And we are missing it.
Exactly.
The whole 86 years of Bhagwan was only doing this. It was only giving us these opportunities to unleash this power within ourselves.
And see, the opportunity is not ended.
Not ended.
That's what, it continues
yes,
on.
It continues.
From Jesus' words, it continues from Baba.
Yes.
And as we take this, our time in this body will come to an end.
Yes.
Birth is fatal.
Yes.
You know? And so, if we take this opportunity as much as we have this body.
Yes.
To imbibe and really live what we've been taught.
Yes.
And that's the ultimate gift that we give back to God.
Absolutely. What God has given us is His gift, but ultimately what we become is our gift
yes.
to Him. And that is the best Christmas gift that we can give Him, when we become love that He always wanted us to be and that He always is every point in time.
I can't say that any better.
Wonderful. Thank you very much, sir.
Thank you.
Sairam.
So love is the basis, and love is what we should live for. In January 2000, on the New Year Day, January 1st, 2000, Bhagwan said, "You are celebrating today as the beginning of the New Year. Let us not allow any narrow distinctions in our minds. The heart must be soft and the mind must be sweet. Do not poison your nectarous mind by directing it on external objects. Do not waste your time. The one principle that you have to hold and develop is that of love. When love dominates, there is no room for hatred. You must sow the seed of love in loveless hearts. Water it with love. Let love flow in a flood and reach all. You have to cultivate this pure, firm and unselfish love. That is the practice that you have to cultivate in this new year. That is all we have to do. Yes, it is not very easy, but that is the most fulfilling thing. The greatest adventure in our life is to just practice love every moment of our life. Swami says, what is the ideal that you have to show? The ideal that you have to show is you must help all to your utmost capacity. The best way to love God is to love all, serve all. Adopt service and love as your ideals, Bhagwan says. That is how you should commence your new life from this very moment. That is how we should sanctify every moment of this beautiful new year. Let us pray to Bhagwan that every moment of our life we remember that we don't exist for ourselves, we exist for others. Only when others are happy, only then God will be happy. If our focus is always on making God happy, then automatically we will make others happy and automatically we will become a channel of His love. We would have spent our life in such a manner that when we end, when the time comes to say goodbye to earth, we can tell the Lord with a smile on our face, Lord, with everything that you gave to me, I have tried to translate that into love-filled work. Everything that you gave to me, I've used it to the utmost extent. Every talent, every skill that you gave to me, I've utmost extent I've used it to only convert lives filled with love. Please take me back to you. Let me now become one with love. Dear listeners, let this be our prayer as we celebrate this new year. Time is running out and it's time to draw the curtains on this beautiful year, this beautiful Thursday life, this glorious 90th birthday year, 2015. Thank you so much for being with us throughout this beautiful journey. Let us offer ourselves at His lotus feet and pray that we experience Him more and more in the new year, heralding a beautiful chapter in our lives, in our journey to Him. Thank you so much. And a sweet good night and loving Sairam from Prashant and Elect.